step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Hello and welcome back to Pod on the Tyne. My name's George Culkin. I'm afraid there's no Taylor Payne this week because he has been the subject of a late bid from Liverpool and he will be performing for them this season. That's a shame. It's something we're quite familiar with now, aren't we, Chris? How are you?
We very much are. Well, I feel as what has happened on yesterday morning, so that would have been Thursday, I felt like I'd woken up back in July 2025, to be fair. So it's...
What a happy place that was for all of us.
So, yes, it's been a... As I was chatting to you during the week on it, June used to be sort of a downtime, and I'd get to this sort of time of the year, and it would be great in one sense, because it wouldn't be as busy, but I'd also be like scratching around whinging because I had nothing to write about. But actually, I'm longing for those times, because the last three Junes have been absolutely horrendous. We had PSR 2024, then last year we had Paul Mitchell leaving and sort of the fallout of Newcastle missing out on basically every player going. And then this year we've had... Similar.
I know.
Not quite as chaotic, but yeah.
Everybody would go away straight after the last game of the season, everybody football-wise, and so you knew that things would be quiet, and it's flipped around on its head. The only person who's gone away is Taylor. That's made our life more difficult, as well as everything else Newcastle-wise. So, yeah, anyway, the Premier League fixtures are out, and as we take our first tentative glimpse towards the new domestic season, oh my goodness, how does that make me feel saying that out loud? Everything's going completely fine, completely fine. So let's start off with a few headlines.
To the spoils, Victor, Munoz takes a late turn onto the M62.
Yes, a familiar development for Liverpool. There you go. I've just said it. A familiar turn for Liverpool. That's how it feels. Newcastle United express an interest in a player. He goes to Liverpool. The end. But, Newcastle thought they had a deal in place for Victor Munoz. Everything was progressing well, if not perhaps with a sense of great urgency. But before they know it, Liverpool come in. They meet his €40 million release clause. And another one bites the dust. Second up, Stevie Nixon departs, Chris.
Well, he is departing. He's not gone yet, but Newcastle's head of recruitment has told Newcastle that he's basically handed in his notice, essentially, and he's going to be going to a championship club. There's been speculation as to whether that's West Ham, Birmingham, Wrexham have all been linked. There's been no confirmation there, but yes, he will be leaving. Over the past few years, his role essentially has become less of a crucial voice because of the people in and around Eddie Howe, but he has been a very important figure for Newcastle. He's been there for 15 years, and yes, he will be leaving in the coming months. So third, City joins Spurs in the pursuit of Sandro Tonali.
Yes, things have been ramping up a little bit in the past few days. Sandro Tonali, we know that Newcastle are vulnerable to bids for him and that his representatives have been in talks with other clubs, even if those clubs have not been in direct talks with Newcastle. Manchester City, in spite of being interested and pursuing Elliot Anderson, are also looking at Tonali. And Spurs, too, have emerged as a potential destination for him. Spurs? Really? Is that who Newcastle should be selling to? I don't think so. And fourth and last, opportunity knocks, Chris, again.
Yes, so this is the news that Newcastle have belatedly secured a front-of-shirt sponsor for next year and for the upcoming three seasons, and that is Knox Hydration, who are already going to sponsor the training ground, which will be renamed the Knox from the start of July. And in the current climate, Newcastle think they've got a pretty good deal, but there'll be more to come on that later on.
So I suppose this has to count as the first pod on the Tyne of the new season, but we've rounded off last year in WSL2 on our Extra Tyne service. We had an extensive interview with Charlotte Potts, the retiring centre-half legend who played a pivotal role in Newcastle's back-to-back promotions. Love chatting to Charlotte, who is now pregnant, expecting a child, and looking back on her career. So please go to podonthetyne.supportingcast.fm to access that, as well as our back catalogue of documentaries, Q&As, and other extras. Right. Fixtures, Chris. So we always get to this time of the year. We do know that Newcastle have to play everybody twice.
You like to remind us of that every time as well.
Yeah, well, I always get like a bit annoyed about the fact that we have to sort of think about what is the potential narrative. And then sometimes the narrative just comes and hits you straight in the face and you can't ignore it. It's a tough start for Newcastle, isn't it?
Yes, I think there's no getting away from that. We sort of, if you're going to be doomsday about it all, I've said this really on the podcast that ended the one of last season's sort of review going back, is that my fear was that Newcastle would get a difficult fixture list to start next season, and for a head coach in Eddie Howe who's already under significant pressure, who needs positive results, could have done with the sort of positive boost that maybe you would get with a kind start to the season, or that you'd hope would come with a kind start of the season. And it very much does not look like that. I wouldn't say it's the worst start that Newcastle have ever had, but I also would say that if you could have offered Howe a run of fixtures early on, this would definitely not have been it. I mean, Liverpool will start, and we'll come on to in a second the sort of narrative around that, but that's at home, that's at St James's Park. It's been selected for British television, so that will be on the Sunday, the 23rd of August. That's Newcastle's first game of the season. They then will go to Spurs the following weekend, which would have been a kind fixture last season, but Spurs survived and they look like they're going to invest heavily, and Newcastle have a decent record there, but you wouldn't say that that's exactly the fixture you would have wanted. And then third up, Bournemouth come to Tyneside, and we know that Eddie Howe does not beat Bournemouth in the Premier League, just as he has not beaten Liverpool in the Premier League as Newcastle head coach. And then Newcastle go to Leeds, which in itself is a tough sort of tough fixture. So yes, I wouldn't say that if you could have hand selected the start to the season, that would have been it. You would have wanted a home game, but probably not that one. And there is a lot of narrative around that Liverpool match, isn't there, George?
Well, there certainly is, yes. As we've already trailed to some extent, obviously Liverpool coming to town, that is, that's the team that beat them to the signing of Hugo Ekitike last summer, who then prized Alexander Isak away in very contentious circumstances. Isak effectively going on strike, refusing to train and play with the team, and then going, albeit for a British record transfer fee, but a deal that just threw Newcastle bang under pressure from the start of the season, something they didn't really recover from, put the team into transition and everything. You know, there was just such a huge amount of fallout. And of course, Isak didn't play against Newcastle last season because he was pretty immediately injured. It didn't particularly work out for him, didn't particularly work out for Liverpool either. Obviously, Arne Slot has now gone. But yeah, just laden with significance and weight. You know, there's a bit of spice added to it because of the relationship that used to exist, certainly, between Eddie Howe and executives at Liverpool, who he'd previously worked with at Bournemouth. And then, of course, Victor Munoz, you know, Newcastle again showing interest in an up-and-coming young player, their leading target to replace Anthony Gordon, of course, and then Liverpool have gone in for him. And so there'll be a lot on that, but Alexander Isak, you would think, will be the focal point. Now, I mean, I'm of the generation, and believe me, there are still people inside Newcastle, former players and things like that, who do exactly the same thing as me. Just look at fixtures and you go, okay, we'll lose that, we'll lose that, we'll lose that, and then we're bang under pressure. And I'm just of that generation. It is that sort of pessimism. But if you take last season away, shouldn't we be of the mindset thinking, okay, well, why can't we win that? Why can't we win that? Why can't we win that? And why can't we be top of the league at that point? Or am I just being ridiculous?
Well, that's a change of mindset that they're sort of trying to bring in, certainly from the very top, if you were looking for somebody who's uber optimistic, then that would be the sort of David Hopkinson chief executive, his outlook on things. And I'm sure that that there are, and I'm sure Eddie Howe's looking at his staff are looking at the fixtures and thinking, yeah, this is a real opportunity. This is the time we can finally actually beat Liverpool at home, or beat Liverpool in the Premier League. This is the time we can finally actually beat our former side Bournemouth. So I hope they are approaching like that. I hope they're not being as pessimistic or negative as maybe we are. It's just on paper when you look at that, and given the week Newcastle have had, well, certainly just in the, I mean, this is basically 24, 36 hours after the Victor Munoz news has come out, that I think that that also adds into that. If Newcastle get some positive signings through the door by then, that's the crucial thing at the moment. As things stand, they lost their top goal scorer from 2023-24 and 24-25 in Alexander Isak. They then have lost Anthony Gordon. They could lose Sandro Tonali, and it's about who they replace those with. So at the moment, the team is getting weaker, and those fixtures already look difficult. So in that sense, I am probably more in your camp, although we also know that I am naturally pessimistic anyway. So
you took us up to the Leeds fixture. After that, Newcastle are at home to Hull, newly promoted. They then go away to Coventry City, newly promoted. Home to Aston Villa, that'll be tough, of course, but they're at home. Away to Crystal Palace, and then home to Everton. You know, that feels like if they were to get a positive start, or something that, you know, not a horrible start, there might actually be something to build on there. Now, I'm not like you, Chris. You know that. You know that I'm not a man for granular detail like you. So I've only looked at the beginning of the fixture list. I just assume that Newcastle will be playing Manchester United at Christmas, and also that they'll be ending the season at Fulham. And I'm not even sure if I particularly care whether you contradict me, because I just know that's probably fact. Correct?
It is unfortunately not fact. Ugh. But there are some parallels. They are playing a Manchester club on Boxing Day, or theoretically on Boxing Day. Obviously, when we talk about any of these fixtures beyond the first and last day of the season, they could change day or whenever they are. But they are hosting Manchester City, so at least they're not going there, because we know they always lose at the Etihad, and it will be presumably Enzo Maresca's Man City by then. Pep Guardiola have left, so is it as daunting a fixture? Possibly not, but at least Newcastle are at home then. And they end the season actually at newly promoted Hull City. So that's not a trip. It's a trip, but it's not a ridiculously long trip as it usually is. Or it won't be flotillas down the Thames. I don't even know what the
flotillas up the Humber estuary.
Up the Humber, yeah. Or you could go all the way down the coast, couldn't you?
You could. You could theoretically do that to London as well, of course.
Well, you could, yeah. That would just take a bit longer. But they're just on the Man City game on Boxing Day, that is part of what looks like a tricky, as it tends to be every year, tricky festive period for Newcastle. So that they are Brentford away on the around the 19th of December, and we know how that's gone the last few years.
So we look forward to the reset 2 days later, the big reset.
Yeah, they then host Man City on Boxing Day. They host Forest on the 30th of December, and Forest turned them over around that time of the year a few years ago, when Alanga and Chris Wood tore them apart. And then they go to Chelsea and go to Manchester United to start 2027. So not the kindest start to the new year either.
We've been talking about fixtures for 5-10 minutes here. We haven't even mentioned Sunderland yet. Now, I think in normal we just pretend they're not going to happen. You know, I think the cliche would normally be those are the first fixtures you look for. But I think as you've said, the start stands out so much, that's sort of natural that we look at that with everything that's laden with Liverpool. But come on then, what about the Sunderland fixtures? Where do they fall?
So the first fixture falls on or around the 5th of December, so early December, similar time to last year, slightly earlier, but the similar sort of time of the year. But they will actually be at St. James, isn't that one? So that's the home derby first, and then the away derby is around the start of May, so it's not till quite late into the season. Now, that's tricky for Newcastle in that they would like, I think, early on to have maybe got a Sunderland game out of the way, or to try and build some positive momentum. Not if they're going to lose it, but for how it feels important, particularly if they've got that difficult start, if you could have had a Sunderland game slightly earlier on to try and generate some positive momentum in that regard. At least it gives them sort of time to build up to that, I suppose. Sunderland would have played a lot of European fixtures by that stage, so by the first game in early December. So maybe that sort of suits them a little bit. But we know how, not only is that start, they're going to be a lot of focus for anyhow. But if he does, I mean, I suppose there's there's a slight question as to would he last until December if it goes really, really wrong early on. But let's not be totally fatalistic in that regard. But there could be quite a lot of pressure going into that Sunderland game at home at the start of December.
Yeah, you mentioned Europe, and of course that'll be totally fascinating to see how they do. Will we see a Macam in Milan this season? It's entirely possible.
It is.
But actually, it comes in a busy little spell for Newcastle, because they have, as things stand, they've got away to Brighton on the 28th. You can do that. At home to Man United on the 2nd, and then at home to Sunderland on the 5th. So that's actually a busy spell. So in terms of fixture congestion, Newcastle don't get away, you know, won't have a full week to prepare for that game.
No, but then Sunderland won't have either. So but it didn't matter either way last season, did it really, how much preparation? I mean, Newcastle didn't have preparation for either of them, but going into them off the back of Champions League games, at least they won't have that. So maybe actually that's the positive of not being in the Champions League, that they can actually try and be better prepared for one of these games. I suppose the final thing is just to really look at the run-in, and whereas the start is difficult, I'd argue the run-in is relatively kind. After they play Liverpool in sort of early to mid-April, they then host Spurs, host Ipswich in back-to-back games, go to Sunderland, so not kind, but then they host Coventry, go to Villa, host Palace and go to Hull. I don't think that is the worst sort of run-in, and if you can generate some momentum, then hopefully Newcastle are in and around the European picture by then, and they can sort of secure that European football at that stage.
Well, what you're telling me there is Newcastle to be crowned champions on the penultimate weekend of the season.
Oh, penultimate, all right. It's just going to be a glory trip down to Hull, is it?
On the Sunderland fixtures, just to say, finally, I mean, last season it didn't matter when they were. Newcastle just didn't show up for either of them. If they could actually show up for those fixtures this season, that would be nice. All right, are we ready to move on from fixtures?
I think so. I think we've talked enough about Newcastle playing games at some point roughly around when they've been announced here.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Yeah, well, if Newcastle playing games didn't depress you enough, I'm joking, come on, we can be positive at this point, surely, then Newcastle missing out on footballers will certainly not cheer you up, particularly at this stage. They have, of course, we should remember, signed a promising young player in Ewan Dewan, I'm just going to call him, but they have also missed out now on a big target. It felt like it came out of the blue. Victor Munoz joining Liverpool when it had seemed pretty much in the bag for Newcastle. So give us a lowdown, Chris. What has happened? And then we'll talk about why this may have happened.
So it's been sort of widely reported, including by ourselves, for a couple of weeks that Victor Munoz was the replacement for Anthony Gordon, who Newcastle had decided upon. And that was, he was their top target in the sense that they would have had other targets if they'd gone into European competition, and certainly if they got in the Champions League, then I think they may have been aiming slightly high price-wise, or players who I know they like at current Champions League clubs. But they really wanted Munoz. How really wanted Munoz? I've seen some discourse out there that this was sort of like Ross Wilson-led, and that Howe didn't want him. And I mean, that just is not the case. Howe did want him, and Wilson was the one who was sort of leading on the deal. And Newcastle have been in negotiations for about 10 days or so with Osasuna. This was a complicated deal to do because although Osasuna held all of Munoz's registration, he is formerly a Real Madrid player, and they held 50% of his economic rights. So essentially, they were going to get 50% of the proceeds from a sale. They also had three buyback clauses, one of which were active for each of this summer and into the next two summers. And so, although they weren't directly involved in the full negotiations of the transfer, there was also talks held with Real Madrid. Now, this is going to get a bit convoluted, but Real Madrid had a presidential election for which Florentino Perez was re-elected in. That didn't conclude until after the first weekend in June, which basically negotiations couldn't be go to an advanced stage until after that. After that, Newcastle were in regular contact with Osasuna. And by Monday, I had the information, which I put to Newcastle. They didn't firm up. It turned out subsequently was correct that Newcastle had agreed a fee with Osasuna for Munoz. Now, he held a €40 million release clause, but Newcastle insist that the release clause was never really mentioned by Osasuna as needed to be met, and actually they agreed a fee of around about €33.5 million, which is about £29 million plus €5 million in add-ons. And so, as of then, Newcastle thought they had agreement with the club, the player, and the agent. Fast forward to Wednesday, and Newcastle are ready to conduct a medical in the US. They were getting everything in preparation. They had a delegation ready to conclude that. And then it was sort of, there was almost like the pause button pressed. Oh, there's just an issue from the player end. And then subsequently, Newcastle found out that he was going to Liverpool. Liverpool had actually come in, gazumped Newcastle by enacting the clause of €40 million, and the player had chosen to go there. And basically, as of Thursday, when the deal was concluded, Newcastle were still searching for answers and don't really know themselves what had happened.
Okay, you fast-forwarded to Wednesday. I'm going to press stop on you talking. Well, you'd already done that yourself. I'm going to fast-forward to Friday, and I'm going to put it to you that for all those lovely, intelligent, articulate words that you've used about why this deal was complicated to do, and I would put it to you, sir, that Liverpool have not found this a complicated deal to do. They have done it in the space of 24 hours, or so it feels to me, and they have largely done it by meeting Munoz's release clause, which you do mention. Why the hell did Newcastle not make life easier for themselves and met that release clause? If they'd done that, surely whatever Real Madrid have or own of him would have been rendered absolutely insignificant.
Yeah, it's a very fair question, and it's one which I know supporters are asking, and so I actually have put it to people high up at Newcastle, and their response is, as I said before, the clause itself was not cited by Osasuna, so Newcastle didn't feel that they had to pay that clause, and they use a sort of analogy of, like, if a house is on the market for £1 million, but you can get it for 750,000, why would you pay the higher amount? Now, there are also SCR squad costs.
I would respond to them by saying, if a house is on the market for £1 million, you're not guaranteed to get it if you pay £1 million. Somebody else could still make a bigger offer. Your offer could be accepted. Munoz had a release clause of €40 million. If Newcastle had triggered that, sure, I mean...
They wouldn't have been guaranteed to get him. Could still have triggered it.
But they wouldn't have had to wait negotiations with Real Madrid or elections.
There would still be negotiations with Real Madrid, because Real Madrid wanted certain clauses. Because Real Madrid could have unilaterally, they had an €8 million buyback clause. If they'd really wanted to, they had no intention of doing so, but if they'd really wanted to, they could theoretically.
But if they had no intention of doing it, they haven't activated it, and Liverpool have done it.
Yeah, but during talks, they wanted certain things. Now, what it would have been with Newcastle is Real Madrid would have had a time-dependent clause whereby if Newcastle were ever going to sell, they had matching rights to be able to match the deal. But Newcastle would have been under no obligation to sell. I think it's had the same clause as being inserted into the Liverpool deal. But the point about the release clause, the way that Newcastle look at it is that, yes, could it possibly have been done quicker if they'd met the release clause? Yes, I think maybe the argument. But Newcastle are trying to be more financially prudent this year. They spent a lot of money last summer. Squad cost rules, SCR, are real and are still a thing for them, as are even more so UEFA financial rules, which even though Newcastle aren't in UEFA competition next season, they still have to abide by, because they are reaching a settlement as things stand with UEFA, which they need to stick to. And if they want to get back into European competition in future seasons, there's a three-year ruling element to that. So there's that part of it. And Newcastle, although people only go, it's only €4 or €5 million, that is actually consequential in what Newcastle can do. That could be the difference between signing a €20 million player this summer and not signing a €20 million player this summer, if you've already paid for that, or the wages of somebody. And they insist they had a deal agreed. Now, Osasuna talk about verbal agreements rather than deal agreed. Newcastle are adamant the deal was done. I'm just giving across what they are saying. I'm not. I get that it's a fair question, and I can see why people are still raising it. And maybe it would have been done sooner. It's a counterfactual that I can't prove or disprove otherwise. But their argument is we had a deal agreed for an initial €33.5 million, which is €6.5 million less than the release clause, that the deal was there, the deal was going to happen, and Liverpool have come in afterwards. So that is their counter to that.
Yeah.
But clearly something has gone wrong. Clearly they haven't got the deal done quickly enough. And this is the problem. Whenever they come up against Liverpool, as it's been so often, because there was also Leone, the centre-back in Newcastle, thought they were going to have a deal for last summer, Liverpool came in, and then it was never going to happen. Come against Liverpool, when they've come against Chelsea, Manchester United, Man City with Trafford in the end last year, all that's slightly different because there's the clause there. They miss out on these players, and that is unfortunately where they remain in the food chain. And the difference this year, I don't... There's been a bit of discourse out there about Munoz. It's not, you know, Newcastle still going after the wrong players. A lot of people wanted Munoz, but I think that if there hadn't been a change of... And this is, again, counterfactual, I can't prove this, but if Iraola had not gone into Liverpool, I don't think that he would have been going to Liverpool. I don't think Honest Lot would have signed him. Newcastle were at the front of the queue, thought they'd been at the front of the queue for a while, even if they were aware of Liverpool's interest. But there is no way of sugarcoating this. This is a huge blow. He was the winger that they wanted. They thought that he had a huge ceiling to which to improve. They basically thought they were signing the Anthony Gordon, or very similar to the Anthony Gordon of January 2023, that a similar sort of player who wasn't the finished article by any stretch of the imagination, but who could grow into that, had very similar attributes, could play across the front three, which is what they wanted. And now they're going to have to look elsewhere, and they say they have other targets, but he was the player they wanted, and it feels like they're back to the drawing board to a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, the point you make about money and finances, of course, is very important. You know, you do get you get people, you get fans, you get us people. So, you know, just pay the money. And of course, you know, ultimately Newcastle did just pay the money last summer, but they paid way too much money. And you can't do that. You can't do that every transfer window. They held out. I mean, this wasn't a deliberate strategy. They held out for as long as they could on Isak and ended up getting more money than Liverpool were originally offering for him earlier in the window. But at what cost? I mean, that is the equation you have to try and work out. It's like, we may get some more money here, we may save a bit money here, but what are the consequences down the line? So of course you want value, and of course value is important. You've put the kind of club perspective very well there. So I'm now going to ask you a far more loaded question, in which I want your opinion. Have Newcastle messed this up?
It's hard to say that they haven't when Munoz is not a Newcastle player. So the fact that they went all in for him and haven't secured him, there's no way of trying to paint that as anything but a failure in that regard. And the whys and wherefores will be debated and discussed, because and they should be internally, because the deal hasn't happened. But I get why a lot of people are very, very annoyed and frustrated and concerned by this. I entirely understand that, because it doesn't set a great precedent going into summer, which was supposed to be different, and the hope is that it is going to be different. And I still think we can't really judge this window until it closes, and realistically until further down the line after that. But it's not a good look that Newcastle have. There was a lot of positive coverage and response from supporters when Gordon was sold so early for the price that he was. Miley was tied down to a long-term contract. Jowen came in early, and that felt like a positive start. But the reality is, as I said earlier on in the podcast, Newcastle have lost the top scorer from last season. They've lost a key player there. They're probably going to lose Sandro Tonali. So in the space of less than 12 months, they're going to have sold three of their best players. And until new players are in and signed, and until we see them out on the pitch, there's going to be question marks. Because even when those players are signed, this is the slight risk that there is with what Newcastle are trying to do, is that when you sign young and exciting players, there's no guarantee that it's going to immediately work out. And I get that people were excited by Zhao, and this is the fresh direction and the like, but the likelihood is Zhao isn't going to be really contributing that much on the field, certainly in the Premier League, in 2026-27. So as things stand, Newcastle's squad is weaker once again. So purely within all of that, it's hard to paint this as anything but a failure, really.
Yeah, it's a really sort of interesting moment, because as you say, I mean, you know, Newcastle was sort of happy for, you know, Gordon leaving, Miley's contract, Joanne to a certain extent, you know, that's them meaning business. You know, it's like, this is different, as you said. And so, you know, this doesn't feel like that momentum continuing. I mean, it feels like a quite sharp full stop on that on that momentum. And as you say, it sort of depends. It depends on your viewpoint to a certain extent. You can say, okay, yeah, well, if we fast forward again to August and Newcastle will have a new, hungry, interesting team, you know, that will be different. We can kind of get behind that and be excited about it. But if you switch that around and add this summer onto last summer, as you say, Isak's gone, Gordon is now gone, Tonali may be going. Is Newcastle still a club where players of that stature want to stay at and can stay at to achieve their ambitions? And, you know, after all the rejections from last summer too, particularly in the early part of the window where Newcastle went in for quote-unquote Premier League-ready players and were snubbed or gazumped by, you know, legacy top six clubs, are they seen as a club where players still want to come to? Do they have the project? You know, is the project, to use that horrible word, still viable? Is it still drawing people in the way that it was? And so it's not just about our perception or perceptions of fans or how it is seen as Newcastle. There is a wider picture here. Like, if Newcastle are continually being rejected by their leading choices, what does that say about the club? And it becomes I don't think that's a meaningless thing to say. They will go on to buy more players. I know they will. But they want to go out and buy players who will materially affect the first team, make the first team better, lower the age, yeah, but, you know, also be good. So that is a slightly sort of existential point, I know, but I do think that's an important one. It's not just about our perceptions. It's about the perception of people that they want to bring to the club too, right?
Oh, very, very much so. And that's the concern right now. And the fact if Sandro Tonali was to say go to Spurs, and we're going to come on that in a bit, that really does add into that. And it just makes you think, well, where are Newcastle? And it's only mid to late June. We have to wait and see what happens over the course of the next few weeks. But those concerns, fans do have a lot of worries that the players are overlooking them. I just want to make one point about it. I've seen a lot of people saying that why did Newcastle exude such confidence over signing Munoz? They've made it look ridiculous. And I just want to say that, and I found this frustrating to a certain degree, as I mentioned, I had the sort of figures earlier in the week that Newcastle had sort of agreed this fee with Osasuna and couldn't get it firmed up necessarily at the Newcastle end enough to publish. But Newcastle have not been the ones who were leading the narrative on this. All of the sort of coverage of it has been led basically from Spain and then followed up at this end. Newcastle haven't been leaking. They haven't been the ones who've been sort of saying, oh, you know, this is going to happen, this is the player, blah, blah, blah. It's almost been, that's been followed up upon. And then that makes you wonder, again, it adds to the idea of, have Newcastle sort of been used? Was that the agent who was leaking that? Was that Osasuna? Was that to try and get Liverpool or others to the table or certainly to firm up their interest? Again, that's all speculation, but that I just wanted to sort of clarify that a little bit, that regardless, whatever way you look at it, they aren't great optics for Newcastle, but it wasn't that Newcastle were like, we're definitely going to sign this player. They weren't the ones leading that.
Okay, so you trailed it there, Chris. Sandro Tonali, let's talk about him for a little bit. Spurs, I mean, no. Just no. I mean, I'm just going to say Spurs, Tonali, no.
Yes, well...
No, don't say yes, I've just said no. Tonali, no, I've said.
No.
Tonali,
no.
Spurs, no.
Sorry, I'll restart. No, well, this is a point which I think has been made to people at Newcastle and needs to keep being made. And again, when you're talking about that almost existential idea of what Newcastle are, where they're getting to sell to Spurs at this stage would be very damaging from an image perspective. It may be that they would get a good financial deal and that might help them sign more players, but sometimes the pure finances of a deal need to be overlooked. And in this case, Spurs have finished 17th in the Premier League in each of the last two seasons. They were nearly relegated last year. Yes, they won the Europa League the season before and were in the Champions League and got the last stages last year. But they are theoretically a direct rival with Newcastle to try and break the hegemony at the top. They are already one of the sort of established so-called big six, the one that a lot of people would suggest have the least credence in being part of that, but they have long been established there. They have the money that comes with the elite stadium that they have. And they get the reap the benefits from that, despite not being in the position they would want to be in the table and not being in European competition either this season. And I just think if Tonali was to leave and select to go there, Newcastle agreed to let him go there, and you're basically directly strengthening a rival, I think that it's just the optics of it are terrible, but also just what it means and says about Newcastle at this stage, I think it really would be a terrible look.
Yeah, it's that thing, isn't it? All money is not equal. I wrote a column about this for The Athletic, which got a bit sort of overshadowed by what happened with Munoz, and sort of, you know, in which I talked about if Newcastle are Brighton or Bournemouth or Brentford, but on steroids with a bigger checkbook, that's sort of okay. And it's sort of okay at this stage of their progress to say, all right, well, you know, Isak, you know, that didn't work out very well, but Isak went to Liverpool where he was guaranteed double his money. He was guaranteed pretty much the Champions League. He was guaranteed to be challenging for trophies every season. It's the same argument with Gordon, done much better. You know, he's gone to Barcelona. That's an opportunity. You can't really turn it down. Newcastle aren't at that level yet. And if it's done on their terms, which this one was to a much greater extent, then that's fine. And, you know, they can't offer what Barcelona can offer, what Liverpool can offer, what Manchester City can offer. And so you can kind of reluctantly make the point and say, okay, you leave with our best wishes. You know, we want to be challenging those clubs. That's our idea. That's the big vision. That's where we want to get to in a few years' time. We're just not quite there yet. It's very different, as you say, taking money from Spurs but making them stronger, the big six in inverted comma team that you arguably have overhauled. Shouldn't forget, of course, that they were also in the Champions League last season and won a European trophy the year before, but in Premier League terms have been a shit show. And, you know, Newcastle have been a much more credible club when it comes to that sort of stuff. It is weird. It sort of brought a very visceral response in my own brain. It's like, no, that cannot be allowed to happen. You know, Newcastle do want and need to sell smarter and sell better. But sometimes you just have to say no, right? And this, it's just that weird thing. You get a big money offer for Tonali that allows you to do possibly what you want to do, but surely they couldn't say yes to Spurs. It's no disrespect to Spurs, by the way. I'm not like having a go at them. It's just sort of where they are in the pecking order compared to Newcastle right now. That, I mean, I think the optics would be terrible for Tonali as well. It's like, okay, you want to leave. You want to leave. You know, again, if the feeling is I need to go and play at the very, very highest level, you know, that's my level. I need to be in the Champions League. I want to be winning things. I want to be challenging for the biggest trophy. It's like, okay, well, why are you going to Spurs then? Who are, you know, in terms of like basket case clubs, are right up there at the minute. So, I mean, whether it happens or not, we don't know. We know that his representatives have been talking a lot. They talked to Arsenal in January. There were no direct club to club talks, and they haven't been now. But it's just weird how Manchester City would feel more palatable. And in the last couple of days, their interest does feel as though it's hardening up.
It does, yeah. I mean, I think Sandro Tonali's representatives have spoken to every single club under the sun, but by the sounds of things. But yeah, Man City, the reporting from our colleagues at The Athletic is that Man City, although they are pushing strongly for a very expensive deal for Elliot Anderson, they would also theoretically be prepared to do both Anderson and Tonali this summer. For big money, which would be an investment, probably the best part, if not more than $200 million for the two collectively. I mean, Newcastle are in a strong position. Tonali is contracted already until 2029 because the contract was extended by a year during his gambling ban, which he agreed to. He wanted to do that, but Newcastle also have the unilateral option of extending that to 2030. So essentially, he's contracted for another four seasons. He's on very good money. The complete package that the deal would cost, there are very, very few clubs who can afford him. Ideally, the suggestion is he'd probably like to go back to Italy, but that just is not something that can happen. At the same time, Newcastle are not closed off to Tonali going. In fact, some people at the club if they don't speak about him in the past tense, there is almost that sort of comes across that way. And Newcastle are certainly planning for other players who could come in and potentially replace him midfield wise.
Before joining Liverpool at the last.
Before joining Liverpool, yeah, Lamine Kamara at Monaco, they're really like, yeah, he could end up at Liverpool, probably given what usually happens. But so in that sense, it's not that Newcastle are fearful of the noise as they see it out there. I mean, they would say that certainly in Spurs' case, they just haven't heard from Spurs. And if you want to sign a player, then you need to speak to the club at some stage and find out what the price is. And that just hasn't been the case yet. But I think that there is still a strong chance that Sandro Tonali leaves this summer. I don't think it's guaranteed, but I think there is a strong chance that Tonali leaves. And I think everyone just needs to sort of get their heads around that to a certain degree. And again, it comes down to Newcastle bringing players in. I think optics-wise, again, if we come back to optics, which we've spoken about a lot in this podcast, if Tonali goes before Newcastle sign a first-team player, then I think suddenly then that would be really, it would be mounting the sort of negative coverage around Newcastle, because then they would have sold their three best players in less than 12 months and actually not brought in a player yet, having missed out on their top winger target. So in terms of the way things fall, it would be nice to think that before Tonali goes, ideally have a midfielder in, but ideally they have multiple players signed as well, so it doesn't just look like it is an exodus of their best players.
And if he goes to Tottenham, I mean, people's heads will, I think, sort of actually explode. I mean, I think people will just self combust on the streets of Tyneside. So that can't happen. It's just come to my attention. I should have noticed this earlier, but our brilliant producer Ollie has put, how worried should we be about this, at the bottom of every single section we're mentioning, which that just feels like a beautifully Newcastle kind of thing.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I'm going to move us on to Steve Nixon, Newcastle's head of recruitment. Or is he the head of recruitment? Has he been the head of recruitment? Is somebody else the head of recruitment? Who does the recruitment? It does feel like Newcastle's recruitment department has been kind of quite convoluted and complicated. If we go back to last summer, Andy Howe, Eddie's nephew, was leading the recruitment, we were told, albeit from his position as deputy head of recruitment. He now has a different job title. Tell us what the latest is, Chris, and how you think we've got here.
Well, on what Nixon's position was, he was head of recruitment, and that is, and I think again, this sometimes comes down to titles and maybe misunderstanding externally as to what someone does. So it wasn't just that Nixon, well, he still is head of recruitment for the first team. He's head of recruitment across the club, so he does stuff for the academy and for the women's side as well. So it's an all-encompassing role. Newcastle will be replacing it as well. It's not is what we are told. It's not, the role is not going to become defunct. Andy Howe is not going to, we don't believe, step across and become the head of recruitment either. He is, his current title, I think, is something like senior football executive, which again, there's this slightly strange structure that there is, but he is basically first team recruitment, whereas Steve Nixon theoretically did a bit of everything. Now, over the course of the last few years since Eddie Howe has been there, and given how close he is to Andy Howe and given who he listens to and maybe trusts the opinion of more, there have been fewer and fewer signings who you could say that was Steve Nixon who identified them. Now, I always think when we say that such and such identified a player anyway, it also sort of aggrandizes their own role and whatever, and sort of diminishes the fact that usually there's been a lot of people involved in the process, and also most of these players are known to most people within football. But again, that's not to diminish the role either. Steve Nixon spotted some very good players for Newcastle, like Jose Perez being one of the prime examples of a player who didn't cost very much money and went on to have a very successful career. Newcastle eventually sold him for 30 million, having signed him for 1.5. Joe Linton, a lot of controversy at the time and for the first year or two afterwards when he was played as a centre forward, but Nixon had identified him as a player, and obviously in time that 40 million has actually looked like a very decent deal given what he's offered elsewhere. Sven Botman as well. He's all over the place.
I will interject about Jolinton, even going back to Rafa's time at the club, because he was asked to sign off on that deal when he knew he was leaving, and he refused to do that because he didn't think that was fair. He did say back then that Steve Nixon's scouting reports weren't exactly glowing about Jolinton, so that one does remain in the land of mystery, I think.
Yes. Well, yes, we'll just leave that one hanging in the air then on that front. But anyway, so he's been at Newcastle for about 15 years. He was head of youth recruitment before being promoted when Rafa Benitez was there, and Graham Card left as chief scout, and then it became the position that Steve Nixon had. And early on, post-takeover, Amanda Staveley and Maida Guduce Lane sort of put a lot onto Steve Nixon. They talk about how influential he was early on when there wasn't a sporting director and the sort of influence he had. So he has...
With Eddie Howe, I mean, that was such a tight-knit...
Yeah.
You know, it's that transfer committee that was kind of used back then and became something else. And since then, it feels like things have kind of diverged a little bit. As you say, everyone becomes totally fascinated about saying... Well, he was his player, he was Eddie Howe's player, he was Andy Howe's player, he was Steve Nixon's player. Actually, it's all of them working together. And when it's worked, and when it's worked well, it's, you know, it involves actually all of them doing their own thing, and it becomes, it's sort of too molecular to say who spotted him first, because as you say, most of these players are all, you know, will already be known if you're in the business of recruitment. And one of the crucial things has always been Eddie Howe absolutely falling in love with that player, being all in on that player, feeling that there's something there, feeling that there's something that he can improve. And in some ways, it doesn't sort of necessarily matter who brings to them, but it's like there has, you know, whether it's this is a after effect of last summer, but it's almost become like, you know, it feels like it's sort of almost warring camps. I'm not saying that's how it is internally, but that seems to have been the perception externally, that some people are trusted, some people aren't trusted. It's become a weird sort of narrative around the club.
Yeah, I mean, on the running order, there's two points that says why now and quote-unquote power struggle played down. And to address both of those sort of points, yes on that front, but also I think since last summer and since this sort of inversion of responsibility to a certain degree that Andy Howe was asked to lead on incoming transfers ahead of the head of recruitment and then subsequent change of position for Andy Howe. I remember when Ross Wilson was coming in and sort of one of the key points that I was putting to people in Newcastle that sort of I thought Wilson had to address was that relationship there. How does this work? Because it doesn't feel like it can just go necessarily back to the way things were before. And what are the sort of power lines of what is the hierarchical structure? Because the hierarchical structure had sort of been turned upside down to a certain degree. I wouldn't say that it felt inevitable that one of the two of them, of Andy Howe or Steve Nixon, would go, but it did feel like it was sort of uncomfortable what was happening, and maybe in time, and I don't know, I can't speak for Steve Nixon, but maybe Steve Nixon has thought after what happened towards the back end last season when it almost became, is this project going to continue with Eddie Howe or is Eddie Howe going to go? Maybe once Howe has been retained and going in this summer that it seems recruitment is going to stay alongside what he would probably be a proponent of, even if there are changes to it. Maybe Steve Nixon just feels it's time and that it's time to move on and go elsewhere. I can't speak for him, but supposedly he is going to a championship club I mentioned earlier, West Ham, Wrexham, Birmingham, among the clubs linked, and wish him all the very best there. But Newcastle are keen for him to stay, I think, for the remainder of the summer window, if possible. I think that's all still to be sort of thrashed out. But yeah, he's got a lot of proponents inside the club who will talk about how positive he has been for youth recruitment and the like, and basically trying to create pathways and the work that has been done with the academy and the loans department. So yeah, but it's we're in the final chapter of Steve Nixon's time in Newcastle, seemingly.
Yeah, it's worth remembering all these things, how peculiar they can sometimes be. Dan Ashworth was the builder, the sporting director, who was supposed to be the builder, who didn't really have a focus on recruitment. Newcastle signed players under Dan Ashworth. In comes Paul Mitchell because they want to do something else. He was the self-styled transfer guru. He was there for 12 months, just about. Didn't sign a first-team ready player that improved Eddie Howe's squad, and you know, now Ross Wilson. It's it becomes a kind of peculiar thing, which is about circumstance as much as anything else, as well as the money that's at a club's disposal. Right, we should move on to Knox. Chris, you wrote about this on Monday and have been working on that story for a while. They have already been announced as training ground sponsors, and now there's a front of shirt deal. Give us a brief outline about that, please.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, it had been a story that had been waiting on for a while. I had known for a little bit that Knox, a deal was being worked with Knox to hopefully bring them in as sort of front of shirt sponsorship, and it's a sort of interesting move in the sense that Seller are no longer going to be on the front of shirt. We know Newcastle were sort of scouring the market for someone, and in the end, they've gone back to a partner who they'd already partnered with going into next season. It's someone, they're a South African sports drink brand. They see themselves as a sort of challenger brand to really sort of push what they see and what they want in Newcastle, being the one they can grow with. And actually, as part of this deal, supposedly Newcastle are going to be working on them for a sort of bespoke drink, which Newcastle's branding will be involved in. I don't know the full ins and outs of that, but that's sort of what we are told. And so already, Knox are paying around £6 million a season for Dorsley Park Training Ground to be renamed the Knox for the next 3 years. And then on top of that, they've agreed a deal which could be worth up to around £60 million on top of the so all in, the best part of £80 million from the deal. Now, just purely on the front of shirt, it is a downturn on what was about £22.5 million a year from Seller that Newcastle had. In the first year, so this year that we're going into, Knox will pay around £10 million, and that's because the shirts have been released. The wonderful shirt that you've bought yourself, George, yeah, that it's gone down so well. Everyone loves this barcode design, don't they? There's really, 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 really positive feedback.
Yes, I mean, I wrote about the new shirt. It was supposed to be a funny kind of piece, and spoke to fans outside St James's on kit release day, and then I told the story about me going in and sort of falling in love with it in a weird kind of way, because it is, on the face of it, absolutely revolting. But it does recall memories of the 92 barcode strip, which was very, very important to me. I didn't particularly like it then, but, you know, because of the team that wore it. So I bought one. Well, it's really so I could tell a story. It's not something that I'm ever going to wear. There is a question on the running order that says, will having a front of shirt sponsor make it look better? And to which I think I would say that I could vomit all over it and make it look better. So I don't think we need to go any further. That is a purchase that I do have buyer's remorse from, I must admit, but I enjoyed the piece. Please have a look at that if you can. Is this a good? So I think you've kind of covered this, really.
I've covered sort of the first. So it's around £10 million for 2026-27, and part of the reason for that is that the shirt has been released without the front of shirt sponsor on. Now you can go back and get it pressed onto it if you want to, and Newcastle are going to get it, put it on, quote unquote, locally wherever it's produced. So it is going to be added on from this stage, but basically they've missed out on part of the branding you would usually have from that, and so the deal is worth less in the first year. The 2 years afterwards, it could be worth up to around £25 million annually, depending on potential bonuses. So over the 3 years, it's less than the previous deal with Seller. But Newcastle have done this in what they insist is a difficult market. Some clubs still haven't agreed their front of shirt moving on, because gambling companies have been basically removed from being allowed to be advertised on the front of shirts, and that has really hit the market. It's not stagnant, but it's struggling. And Newcastle have benchmarked against other clubs, and they look at it, and I think Villa's deal's roughly going to, they think, will be about £15 million a year. Obviously, they're in the Champions League. Everton somewhere between, I think, sort of £6 and £10 million a year. So Newcastle think in the current climate, it's a good deal. And they always, I'd push back against us in a podcast a few weeks ago when there'd been some suggestions that Newcastle think they're going to get more for the money for it. Now Newcastle have packaged it and said, oh, we have got more from Knox, but that also includes Dorsley Park and the renaming of that, and also they sort of see it over the 3 years. If you sort of average it over the 3 years, it kind of is an increase, or is basically staying the same. But I think they see it as a good deal in this market. They're pleased with it. the way that it's seen in their business plan. This is ahead of where they expected to be from a front of shirt when they're not going to be in the Champions League. They are painting it in a positive way. And I suppose for Newcastle, have got that out of the way to have that money and know how much money they've got there. That again helps maybe with the budget for the summer. So in that sense, they seem quite happy with it.
Is it signed and sealed, or could Liverpool still jump in?
Well, never say never, I suppose. Never say never. And the Victor Munoz Knox tie-up that's going to come before the start of the season. Yeah.
Are there more commercial deals on the horizon?
There are certainly some being worked upon. Newcastle are still looking for a front of training shirt sponsor. So Knox will appear on the sleeve of the training shirt and obviously on the front of the actual main shirt now, given they've agreed that deal as well. But they are still looking for a separate front of training shirt sponsor, is one that I know of, and they have been in negotiations of it. I don't know that it's concluded yet and or whether it will be concluded, but they are that's certainly the sort of thing they're still looking at.
We could offer to do it for £100 a season.
£100 a season. Oh, but I think that would help cover a tiny proportion of a new signing's wages for a good hour or so. So yeah, why not?
Fair enough. Right. Okay. I think that's it.
For now, we're going to continue our podcast when necessary policy over the next few days. So if there is some sort of breaking news that Liverpool have signed another player Newcastle wanted, or, you know, God forbid Newcastle actually sign a player themselves, or do sell someone, then we will be back. But we are contractually obliged, and also we want to do a sort of subscriber Q&A each month, and so the one for June will be recorded towards the back end of next week, so please get your questions in on that.
Yeah, this was billed as a quick hit on Newcastle's fixture list release. It hasn't turned out to be that way, because shit always happens. But please go to podonthetine.supportingcast.fm. That is where you can pick up a subscription if you want to listen to that Q&A. And it's very difficult to believe it won't be transfer heavy or just heavy. You can email a question to podonthetine@gmail.com. And as always, the Q&A thread on our subscriber Discord server will be open for entries. We love hearing from you. If you have any feedback or want to get in touch, please do that. We love getting them, and we like reading out your messages. Social media is due a glow up from us, so stand by for news on that. But we are active on Blue Sky at podonthetine.bsky.social. And it's a big goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Chris Wolf.
Yeah, goodbye. You said that as if I wasn't going to say goodbye myself as well.
I was doing the sort of two Ronnies. I was doing the two Ronnies. It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Him. No, that was what. It's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him.
You're showing your age there. So.
Yes, I am showing my age. Taylor Plain. Christ. Taylor Plain, please drive on. Please jump on a plane. Taylor Payne, please. Taylor, please hurry back for reasons which should be apparent to everybody. Goodbye.
It's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games as all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.